seconds, and the shot was at extreme range. Corin steadied his aim, stilled his breathing, and hesitated. The enemy soldier's face was scrunched up in an angry grimace, and his spear was held forward, reaching out toward the royal army. Corin had never killed anyone, never fired an arrow or swung a sword in anger. Seeing the enemy's face, the face of a real person, he hesitated. The two other archers let their arrows fly and either missed or their arrows fell short.
"Corin!" Hedrus hissed out in a loud whisper. "You've probably never killed a man. I know it's not an easy thing to do. Shoot! Shoot now, or more of our soldiers die!"
Corin blinked, feeling his eyelids sting from the salt of dried tears, tears that had welled up in his eyes when D'Artagnan died. Thinking of that brave woman, Corin aimed slightly in front of the enemy rider, pulled the bowstring back as far as it would go, and waited a couple heartbeats. Pedrus may have given him magical fighting powers with the sword, but Corin had always been deadly accurate with a bow, as far back as he could remember, hunting rabbits and deer around his parents' farm. He always knew just when to let an arrow fly. When he sensed the moment was right, he released the bowstring. "Another," he said to Hedrus, while selecting another target, not needing to watch the arrow. The arrow would hit its target. Corin never missed. The enemy rider leveled his spear at a Royal Army soldier and opened his mouth to let out a battle cry. Corin's first arrow impacted right in the roof of his mouth, cutting off his scream. After that first shot, the battle was a blur for Corin. Take an arrow from Hedrus, fit it to the bowstring, select a target, draw back the bowstring, wait for the right moment, and release. Again, and again, and again, and again. Corin was having an effect on the battle. After five of their fellows died from arrows fired at such distance, other enemy riders veered off, trying to keep at longer range. The royal army took the opportunity to break through, and then Corin and the two other archers had to be careful, for their own men were blocking their shots. They switched their focus to the enemy soldiers riding in from the west, charging the bridge directly. Corin had time only to fire two more arrows when Radic's horse pounded into the bridge, and the captain shouted for his men to retreat. Corin followed the soldiers, running as fast as he could, turning to fire another arrow. One Royal Army soldier was hit by an enemy arrow and fell over the side of the bridge into the rushing water below. When Corin reached the far side, completely out of breath, he ducked aside to clear a path for the archers who had taken up position across the end of the bridge, blocking the enemy's path. Two archers were using flints to set fire to the oil-soaked rags they had wrapped around their arrows. As Corin and the last of the Royal Army raced safely past, they let the flaming arrows fly, aiming at the middle of the bridge. The arrows hit and started small fires in the dry old timbers of the bridge deck. But enemy soldiers were charging fast across the bridge, led by a very large man on a massive war horse. The man was entirely clad in black armor, as was the front of his horse. As Corin watched, two Royal Army archers shot at the enemy, but their arrows glanced off his armor. The warhorse did not shy away from the flames, but leaped over and suddenly loomed before them. The enemy soldier raised a blood-stained battle axe, and even the most battle-hardened Royal Army soldier felt fear. Without asking or much thought, Corin pulled an arrow from another archer's quiver, knocked it, aimed and fired in one smooth motion. The arrow took the enemy soldier right in the one gap in his armor, his throat. A cheer went up from the men around Corin as the huge man crashed to the bridge deck and his panicked horse wheeled around, riderless, to leap back through the flames. Two, three, five more flaming arrows hit the bridge, and it was ablaze, effectively blocking the enemy's path. The enemy sent arrows through the flames and shouted insults. but Radic had gotten most of his force safely out of the ambush. The battle was over, for the moment. He left a guard at the end of the now flaming bridge, and gathered his remaining lieutenants to discuss what to do next. Corrin ran over and removed his helmet.
"Captain, sir, what about Pedrus? Lord Salva is in danger."
"What the—"
Captain Radic was startled to see Corrin. Startled, and then angry.
"What are you doing here, boy?"
Radic had lost track of Corrin after the enemy emerged from the tree line. The last he had seen of the wizard servant was of the boy riding back along the army column. When the wizard jumped the fence and rode away across the fields, Radic had assumed Corrin would have followed.
"You didn't follow the wizard."
"No, sir, I—"
"Your place is with your master, boy."
Radic angrily waved his hand for silence when Corrin tried to explain. Part of the anger was because Radic had considered Corrin to be an honorable person. He knew that the wizard and most of Radic's soldiers liked Corrin. Now Corrin had disappointed him severely.
"Lord Salva used his magical powers to give you lightning speed with that sword, so you could protect him, and you run away at the first sign of trouble? No, I don't want to hear excuses. Go see if you can help with the wounded, and stay out of my sight, you coward!"
The captain dismissed Corrin with a disgusted look, and turned to bark orders at his lieutenants.
But,
Corrin stammered, totally surprised by the captain's reaction.
"Sir."
The words died in his mouth, as he realized only three people in the world knew he wasn't a coward. That Pedrus had ordered Corrin away. D'Artagnan lay dead on a field across the river. Artiman was with the wounded, unconscious and uncertain to survive the day. And Pedrus himself? Pedrus was on his own, pursued by three enemy wizards. On the other side of the river, where there were hundreds of enemy soldiers.
"Come with me,"
said an older soldier Corrin didn't know, who had overheard Radic's disgusted outburst. The man's clothes were spattered with blood. Some of it was his own, from a ragged cut on his forearm, and one side of his beard was crusted with blood. He looked no worse than most of the Royal Army men. "Name's Porton, and you're Corrin, right?"
I'm not a...
Corrin self-consciously wiped at the drops of blood on his own face, blood that belonged to Artiman. Corrin himself had not gotten even a scratch during the battle.
"Best you stay away from the captain for a while, and do what he says. Can you help with the wounded?"
the man asked gently. He knew this was the young man's first battle, and the old soldier remembered his own first battle. How shocked, scared, and disoriented he had been all those years ago. Corrin nodded. He was in shock, but not so much from the battle, which was still only a blur, as if it hadn't really happened. His shock was from Captain Radic calling him a coward.
"I'm not a coward."
Coward? In his first battle, he had fought hard and killed enemy soldiers without any real combat training. If Radic hadn't been so busy, he would have seen Corrin shooting arrows. Seen that it was Corrin who stopped that last huge enemy soldier.
"I've helped Pedrus when he's healed people, but I don't know about potions or spells or anything like that."
"Healer's got his own potions, whatever he could carry with him since his wagon's on the other side of the river. Do what you can, and don't you worry about the captain. He just lost a battle and a lot of our men on our own territory. He's not in a good mood about anything, so best stay out of his way for a while."
"We can't just leave Pedrus."
Porton gestured toward the enemy troops across the river. Troops who were still firing arrows when they thought they had a good shot.
"Long as the enemy holds that side of the river, and we're over here, there's not much we can do to help the wizard. But you can help our men here. Come on now, time's wasting."
Corrin knew what it was like to be truly tired before, from long days on his parents' farm, or surviving on his own in the wilderness, or working as the wizard's servant.
He found a new meaning for tired that day.
Already worn out from the unexpected battle, he spent the rest of the day doing whatever the Royal Army's healer needed done, and the man had Corin running ragged. Finding and chopping wood for a fire, hauling water from the river, dodging enemy arrows that still flew from the west riverbank, tending to the suffering wounded as best he knew how, which wasn't much. After Corin collected wood and got a fire roaring, and set kettles of water boiling to clean bandages, the healer asked Corin if he knew where to find bloodroot, which Corin knew could often be found growing along old stone fences and the cellars of abandoned homes. Riding frantically far around the countryside, Corin managed to gather 2 solid fistfuls of bloodroot leaves, and when he got back, even Thunderbolt was foaming with sweat and unsteady on his great legs. The healer, without the magical skills of a wizard, and with most of his supplies in his wagon across the river, was doing the best he could to help the wounded.
"You found bloodroot? Give it here," the man shouted excitedly.
He wiped his hands off on a rag, then took a small pinch of bloodroot and crushed it between his fingers, inhaling deeply.
"Ah, fresh. Good, very good. And more than a handful."
The healer had not expected Corin to find much, if any, of the rare plant, especially since Corin had no idea where to look, having never been in that part of Tarador before.
"How did you find it?"
Corin gave a weary shrug. "South on the road a 1/4 mile. I saw an overgrown lane, figured it used to lead up to an old farm. There's an abandoned farmhouse. The bloodroot was growing around the foundation stones."
The bloodroot had been tangled with an old, thick rose bush. Corin's hands and arms were scratched and bleeding from being ripped up by the thorns.
The healer looked up sharply at Corin, with new respect. He knew little of the wizard's young servant, having never met the boy before Corin joined the army expedition.
"Hmm. That was good thinking. Now, hurry. You know how to prepare a potion of bloodroot?"
"Sir, I've done it many times for paid Lord Salva. Wrap them in clean cloth, plunge into boiling water for a couple of seconds, then gently squeeze the cloth to bruise the leaves to bring out the juice or sap or whatever it is."
"Yes, yes, quickly, quickly. Only 3 leaves per cloth. We have too many wounded and too few leaves. I only hope we are not too late."
The healer glanced at the row of wounded men laying on blankets in the shade under a grove of trees. Corin saw that, while he had been searching for bloodroot, 2 men must have died. There were 2 empty, blood-stained blankets in the row. Bloodroot was very effective at stopping wounds from bleeding. It also stung the skin. By the time Corin had prepared all the bandages, his thorn-scratched hands felt like they were on fire. He ran back and forth from the kettle to the healer, giving the man fresh bandages as needed. When all the bloodroot had been used up, Corin hurriedly tended to Thunderbolt, giving the horse water and removing the saddle before brushing his glossy coat. The horse had eaten his fill of hay in the fields around the abandoned farm, while Corin had collected the bloodroot, which was fortunate, considering that all the feed grain for the army's horses was in wagons across the river. The east side of the river was mostly woods and overgrown meadows, which provided little for the horses to eat. The soldiers all had field rations of dried meat and fruit in their packs, but their horses mostly went hungry. The healer next instructed Corin to make a vegetable broth from a dried mix the man had, and give it to the wounded men to keep up their strength. As the day wore into evening, Corin sat with the men who had recovered enough to speak, trying and failing to reassure them that everything would be all right.
"Sir,"
Corin approached the healer, who had his meager supply of potion bottles laid out on a blanket. The man was holding bottles toward the setting sun, trying to see how much was left in each bottle.
"I gave everyone the broth like you said, everyone who would take it. Artemon hasn't awakened."
The healer didn't know that Corin was most desperate for Artemon to awaken. as the old soldier was the only person around who could tell Captain Raddick that Corrin was not a coward, that Pedrus had ordered Corrin away. If the wizard didn't survive his own battle across the river, Corrin could never prove he wasn't a coward.
Artemon is an old soldier, veteran of many a campaign, the healer answered with great weariness. This may be his last battle, and I fear he must fight this one alone. If he cannot recover on his own now, he'll need a wizard to heal him.
Chapter 11 Captain Raddick sent riders out north, east, and south to see whether the enemy was on the east side of the river also. Even the wounded soldiers struggled to sit up when the first of the riders returned as the sun was setting. Everyone in the camp was anxious for news. The news was good, as far as it went. There was no sign of the enemy on the east side of the river. Raddick, fearful the enemy would use small boats to sneak troops across the river in the darkness, but unable to move the wounded without wagons, ordered his men to cut down trees to create a makeshift barricade and posted sentries along the riverbank. As darkness fell, Corrin found himself with two soldiers on a bluff above the river, cutting down trees. Horton had seen Captain Raddick start making his rounds among the wounded men and had pulled Corrin away to keep the boy out of Raddick's sight a while longer.
"You think the enemy will really try to cross the river tonight, Horton?" the other soldier asked as he wiped sweat away from his eyes.
"Don't matter what I think, nor you. The captain says we build barricades, then that's what we do."
"If I wanted to be a lumberjack, I wouldn't have joined the army," the other man grumbled.
He looked down at the swiftly flowing dark water.
"Enemy'd have to be a fool to try getting across that, at night."
"You think so? And what would you have said the odds were we'd be ambushed this morning, huh?"
Horton swung the axe, and it bit a shallow cut into the tree with a dull thudding sound, instead of a solid thunk. There was only one axe for the three men, and not even a proper wood-chopping axe. Raddick's men had to build barricades with the axe blade of the half-dozen halberds that some men had carried as secondary weapons. The long pole handle of the halberds had been cut down to make it able to be swung as an axe, but the halberd blade was longer and thinner than a useful wood-chopping axe. Still, the soldiers needed to make do with what tools they had. The rest of their tools, food, supplies, medicines and weapons, were in the wagons left behind, across the river.
"Corrin, bring that stone. We need to sharpen the blade."
"Sharpen it much more, and there won't be any blade left,"
the grumpy man grumbled, as he sat down on the ground.
"What are you sitting for, Loxa, you lazy good-for-nothing? You sharpen it this time. Maybe that'll learn you against complaining so much. Corrin, you give Loxa the stone. I'm setting down for a rest."
Corrin handed the sharpening stone to the grumpy Loxa, who sat down and began to run the stone over the axe blade. Corrin's job in the three-man team was to drive two horses to drag the felled trees down to where they would be set into the barricade. Horton had put him in charge of two horses, which usually pulled the cook's wagon. Beasts that were strong and sturdy, not fast. If they had been cutting the trees for lumber, the branches would have been trimmed off before Corrin hitched the logs to the horses. For a barricade, what Raddick wanted were trees with tangled, thick branches, which made them very difficult for the horses to drag through the woods. The trees were constantly getting snagged on other trees, rocks, and pretty much everything, and Corrin had to haul on the branches with all his might to get them unsnagged. By the time he had delivered four trees to the barricade, he had used up all the swear words he'd learned from the Royal Army, and started inventing new curses of his own.
"Looks like we could get some rain,"
Loxa observed. Huh? Why you say that?
Horton grunted, laying back against a tree, with his eyes closed. Loxa pointed to the northwest with the sharpening stone.
Lightning in the clouds, over yonder, there. Storm's coming.
That's funny-looking lightning, Corin said, and hopped on a tree stump to get a better view. I've never seen lightning like that.
Horton roused himself to see what was so interesting about the lightning.
What the hell is wrong with the two of you? Can't you let an honest, hard-working man rest?
Loxa snorted with laughter.
If you were honest or hard-worked...
Quiet! Horton exclaimed. That's not lightning, you fool! You ever seen lightning red and blue like that? That's wizard fire. The light from wizard fire reflected on the clouds above.
Pages! He's alive! Corin shouted excitedly.
Now that he knew what he was seeing, he could tell Horton was right. It was wizard fire, glowing off the bottom of the thin, low-lying clouds to the northwest, glowing blue and red. That morning, the enemy wizards had thrown red fire, and Pedrus blue.
Course he's alive, all right, the old rascal. Alive and given the enemy hell, by the look of it.
Horton said with pride in his voice.
That's our wizard he is.
I never seen wizard fire until this morning,
Loxa said defensively.
You seen old Pedrus fight before?
Well, sure, Horton said. Wasn't I with him when we...
We need to help him,
Corin interrupted.
Help him? I told you before.
Before we didn't know where he was, or that he was still alive and fighting. If there's a battle, that means he didn't get away. He could be trapped somewhere. He needs our help.
You know where he is, do you? You, who never been in these parts before.
He's...
Corin waited for another flash of light.
He's over there, somewhere.
He waved his hand in the general direction of the light. To the northwest, beyond the village, up the river.
We can follow the light to find him.
Corin, lad, your heart is in the right place, but you need to use your head, too.
Horton tapped his temple with a finger.
That's on the other side of the river. We can't even get over there.
Horton pointed down toward the black, rushing water that was now barely visible in the vanishing twilight.
We burned the bridge behind us. For real this time,
Loxa added.
No way to get across, that I know. Nearest bridge is leagues north of here.
Aye. Listen to Loxa, lad. He's right. Nothing we can do tonight to help Pedrus, Horton said. Best we stay here and build a barricade so we can stay behind it until dawn, and some of us can catch a few winks of sleep.
No.
Corin dropped the horse's reins on the ground. I'm not in the army. I'm not a soldier. I'm a servant, and I belong with Pedrus. And he turned and hurried down the hill without another word.
What?
Loxa exclaimed.
You can't just...
Horton grabbed the younger soldier's arm.
Let him be, Loxa, let him be. This is his first battle, and he's right, he's not a soldier. We'll get these last two trees cut and drag them down to the road. Corin will be back, I think. He can't go far.
Corin held Thunderbolt to a fast trot, although he could feel the great horse straining to run. The road was dark and unfamiliar. Corin could not risk the horse stepping into a hole and injuring a leg. The moon was half-lit, high in the sky, but ducked behind clouds too often for Corin to see the road ahead with confidence. This road, on the east side of the river, seemed to be less used than the west side road the army had traveled. The road here was more narrow, deeply rutted, with overhanging trees, and in places old stone walls had partly tumbled into the road. Several times Thunderbolt had stumbled and nearly thrown Corin off when the horse stepped on a stone. Even with his excellent night vision, Corin was afraid to let his horse run in the darkness. An hour after seeing the wizard fire in the sky, Corin was doubting whether he had been right to run off to rescue Pedrus. What was he going to do by himself? After he had run down the hill and found Thunderbolt, he had ridden away as fast as he could, pausing only to lean down from the saddle to snatch a bow and quiver of arrows from the ground next to a sleeping soldier. Corin had let loose the reins. Thunderbolt had surged off into the night, chased by a chorus of shouts from the alarmed soldiers. Corin had urged Thunderbolt onward to bolt through the last gap in the almost finished barricade. Then they were gone, Corin barely hearing the shouting behind him over the wind whistling in his ears. Soon as they were around the first bend in the road, where the light from the campfires and torches of the royal army was blocked by trees, they were plunged into sudden darkness, and Corin had pulled back on the reins, and held Thunderbolt to a brisk trot since then. At first, Corin had been afraid of Captain Radick sending men to pursue him, but in the confusion of setting up barricades and preparing for a night defense, no one thought much of the wizard servant riding out of camp on his horse. The few soldiers who noticed him going assumed Corin had been sent on another errand by the healer. He had gotten away. He had a strong horse, a bow, a quiver of arrows, his short sword, and no idea how he was going to rescue the court wizard. No idea how he was going to get to Pedrus to even get across the river. When the road ran through farm fields, where Corin could see the sky to the west, he would sometimes see wizard fire reflected off the clouds, so he had a very rough idea of the direction he needed to go. The river, however, was still an impossible barrier. Once, when the road ran close to the top of the bluff above the river, Corin had gotten off Thunderbolt and walked to the edge. When the half-moon peeked out from behind the clouds, he saw there was a steep drop to the dark, rushing water. White foam boiled around the rocks. The river was still in spring flood. There was no way Thunderbolt could get across, and Corin would be gambling his life to swim across, even without weapons. He stared down at the river, at the swiftly flowing black water, and doubted himself. What was he doing in the dark, all alone? What did he hope to accomplish? One person with a single quiver of arrows and a short sword, against enemy wizards with scores of battle-hardened soldiers? Maybe he should ride back to camp, tell Porton he was right, and do whatever he was ordered to do. Give up. Give up, and ride back to the safety of the camp, where he could chop wood and boil water, safely surrounded by the royal army. Give up, like a coward. Corin had not been angry during the battle. He hadn't had time. After, he was in shock and scrambling to follow the healer's orders. It was only now, alone with his thoughts in the darkness, that he was free to consider what had happened since the morning. A perfectly pleasant spring morning. And he was angry. The battle was still a blur in his mind, the fighting so unexpected, so brief and intense, that he only remembered bits and pieces, such as when D'Artagnan fell, and the look on the face of that enemy soldier on the bridge, when Corin's arrow caught him in the throat. He wasn't angry about the battle. He was angry that Captain Radick had called him a coward. Corin may be a jinx, may have been cursed by God, may have been a terrible son, may have been abandoned by his parents, but he was not a coward. And he was going to prove that, or die trying. He sprung to his feet, ran back to Thunderbolt, and continued north on the road, anger fueling his determination. They were nearly past the crossroads before Corin realized another road led off to the left. He dropped to the ground and walked carefully along what he thought was the center of the road, feeling grass and weeds brushing against his legs. This road, wherever it led, had not seen much traffic in a long time. He waited for the moonlight. The clouds were thinning and ragged. He soon would have some light to guide him for a few hours, until the moon set over the hills to the west. When the clouds slid aside, Corin got a decent look at the road in front of him. It was overgrown, with brush crowding the thick sides, a downed tree blocking the way. It looked like someone had made an attempt to chop the tree in half, to move it, but then had given up. The road didn't appear to be a promising way for Corin to get across the river. Unless... That morning, he had ridden past another little-used crossroads on the west side of the river, and one of the soldiers who had been in the area before said the road to the east led to an old bridge, which was not used because the center span had fallen in the river. That road had also been overgrown. Maybe the weed-choked road ahead went to the old bridge. Even if the bridge could no longer carry wagons or horses, it might be possible for Corin to somehow use the bridge supports to cross the river. The moonlight helped Corin see at least the outlines of the road and any trees that had fallen across it. But after Thunderbolt stumbled twice on objects unseen under the weeds, Corin dropped down and walked, leading the way. By the time they reached the bridge, the moonlight was steady, and Corin could just barely see wizard fire, not reflected on the scattered clouds, but as a flickering glow on the western skyline, through the trees atop a hill. He must be getting closer to the wizard. Leaving Thunderbolt behind, Corin cautiously walked out onto the bridge. It was narrow, only wide enough for one wagon, but substantial, being built of stone. Leaning over the railing, he could see the bridge was a series of stone arches, soaring high above the river below. Each arch ended in a sort of tower, rising from the river. White rapids glinted in the moonlight around the base of the towers. The grey stone surface of the bridge ended after four arches, replaced by a wooden bridge in the center, which, at one time, reached across to the stone tower on the other side. Some time ago, the wood structure had sagged and tilted to one side. It still reached almost all the way across, but many deck boards were missing, and the other end of the wood bridge deck was below the stone road surface on the other side. Someone had tied a sturdy rope all the way across. Corin tugged hard on the rope. It felt safe. Safe enough for him, carrying his small pack, short sword, bow and arrows. He edged out onto the sagging bridge, feeling for steady footing, holding tightly to the rope. Halfway to the other side, he felt the bridge shift and sway under his weight. With his legs shaking, he inched his way back toward the security of the stone arch. He could gather up his pack, sword, bow and arrows, and make it across. Even if the floor of the bridge gave way, he could hang on to the rope. There was no way for Thunderbolt to get across. The wood bridge sagged so much there was a gap half as high as Corin was tall at the far end. Surely not even Thunderbolt's legs could jump that high. Good horse. Good boy, Thunderbolt. Corin hugged the horse's neck and stroked his shoulder. He left the saddle on, but took off the bridle and reins, tucking them into a saddlebag. You know your way back to the army, right? You'll be fine. You'll be fine. He said more to convince himself than to calm the horse. Corin hated to leave his horse alone, but didn't know what else to do. Now go. Go. Good boy. Corin gave the horse a swat on the rump, and Thunderbolt trotted off the bridge, then turned and stood, watching and waiting. Go! Go away! Corin shouted. But Thunderbolt simply snorted, stumped his feet a few times, and flicked his tail nervously. Shrugging his shoulders, Corin turned and ran to the edge of the stone arch, taking a firm grip on the rope. Knowing what to expect, He was not alarmed when the wood bridge swayed and sagged. Trying to keep tension in the rope, so it could take his full weight if the wood structure of the bridge fell, he walked carefully across, feeling for a solid surface before he placed his foot down on the wood deck. There was little wind that night. He could hear the roar of the water rushing under the bridge, and the creaking of the timbers, and the blood pounding in his ears. When he reached the end of the wood structure, he had to climb up to the stone road surface, hauling himself up on the rope. The stones at the edge were loose. The first time he tried to pull himself over the edge, the stone crumbled and fell back onto the wood deck, which lurched to the side with a cracking sound. Corin held tightly onto the rope, taking his weight off his feet. But he could feel a strong vibration, and then the entire wood bridge was swaying wildly. With a loud clatter of hooves, Corin swung around on the rope to see the now panicked horse racing across the bridge toward him, lurching from one side to the other as the wood surface gave way beneath Thunderbolt's weight. Corin was about to shout for Thunderbolt to go back. Then he saw in a flash that the horse's only chance to survive was to keep going as fast as he could. Desperation gave him strength, and Corin heaved himself up the rope to roll onto the stone surface of the arch. He barely spun around in time to see Thunderbolt, eyes wide open in terror, launch himself into the air on his great legs, with the wood bridge span rocking and sagging beneath his hooves. Corin rolled aside just before the horse crashed down belly first on the stone bridge surface, legs splayed out front and back. Thunderbolt's back legs were hanging in the air, hooves scrambling as the stones on the edge of the bridge broke loose underneath him. Corin flung his arms around the horse's neck and felt himself being dragged over the edge when Thunderbolt rolled on his side, almost crushing Corin, but managing to get his back legs onto the bridge. Still terrified, Thunderbolt scrambled up and raced off toward the other end of the bridge, one hoof glancing Corin's leg and slamming him back onto the stone bridge railing and almost over the edge. He had his own split second of terror as he hung out over the river before pulling himself back from the edge, because even the stone bridge began shaking as the wood span splintered and began dropping into the river. On hands and knees, and then running so fast his feet barely touched the bridge, he followed his horse until they were both safely on solid ground. Perhaps it was the shock of nearly dying and losing his beloved horse, but Corin found himself falling to his knees, hugging Thunderbolt's left foreleg and laughing out loud, laughing uncontrollably. The image frozen in his mind was of Thunderbolt, the mighty terror of the royal stables, flying through the air to flop down awkwardly sprawled on the bridge. Corin had never seen a horse land on its belly, and he didn't think Thunderbolt had either. When he could stop laughing, he walked around the horse, checking for injuries. With Corin's hands touching him, Thunderbolt quickly stopped shaking and panting, and playfully nipped Corin's hair. "You stupid, crazy horse," Corin muttered. "What were you thinking? You're smarter than that." The ground shook as the wood span broke loose from the stone bridge on the far side and crashed into the river with a tremendous splash. "I guess we'll not be going back that way, oh boy," Corin said nervously. Now he was committed, effectively stranded on the enemy's side of the river. He took the bridle out of the saddlebag and put it back on, then swung himself atop Thunderbolt. "Let's get out of here. If the enemy is within a league, they surely heard that bridge fall into the river." Corin urged Thunderbolt into an easy trot, feeling whether the horse was limping, but everything seemed to be normal. He urged the horse into a slow gallop, trusting Thunderbolt to find his way through the weeds on the road in the half-moonlight. He shook his head in amazement at his horse. That the horse could jump off a collapsing bridge, jump higher than Corin was tall, was amazing. That any horse could land so awkwardly and not be seriously injured but be able to carry a rider at a gallop, Corin didn't know what to think. It was no more than a mile to the crossroads Corin had ridden by that very morning, which now seemed a lifetime ago. He recognized the pair of tall, old oak trees that stood on the northwest side of the main road. Behind them stretched a hayfield, the patchy hay barely tall enough to reach Corin's knees. The field ended in a line of trees atop a hill to the west. Through those trees came flashes of light. Wizard fire, much brighter than he had seen before. He must be close now. Excited and scared at the same time, he guided Thunderbolt along a slight depression in the field that led up the hill. The depression must have been an old road. A very old road. The crossroads at one time had gone four ways. Wherever the abandoned road went, it was in the same direction as the wizard fire. And that was where Corin was going. The ancient road used to go through the trees, but trees had long ago grown tall and filled in the gap. What he saw from the top of the hill made him unbuckle the guard around his sword and take the bow off his shoulder to hold in his left hand. The line of trees was thin, maybe 50 yards deep. On the other side of the trees was a field that sloped down to a shallow valley, with a stream shining in the moonlight, and the tumbled-down stone ruins of a small castle, where the wizard's firelight was coming from. A dozen or more riderless horses stood outside the castle walls on the far side. The wall closest to Corin had mostly fallen down, with brush and trees grown up between the stones. There was a section where only a few stones lay on the ground, half buried. That was probably where the castle gate used to be. Thunderbolt could jump over one of the large stones, and then they'd be in the courtyard of the ruined castle. With the enemy. And then what? Then he'd find Pedrus, and help however he could. Captain Radek was right. The wizard had given Corin magical fighting skills to serve as a personal guard. Where he belonged was with Pedrus, not taking shelter with the royal army. Corin realized, with sudden clarity, that he wasn't afraid of dying. His life for the past year was a gift. He could have died alone in the woods, from illness, cold, starvation, snakebite. 1,000 things could have gone wrong. For a boy alone in the wilderness. Or he could have drowned in the raging river when he was trying to hang on to a girl he didn't even know. He could have been killed by the bandits, or by Duke Yaren's men. Or he could have fallen off the roof of Yaren's palace. He could have died that very morning in battle, despite Pedrus's effort to send him away to safety. He could even have died that very night by falling into the river when his inexplicably foolish horse had insisted on following him, even at the risk of his own life. Thunderbolt. He was not afraid for his own life, but he regretted risking the horse's life. "I'm sorry to bring you into this," he said as he patted the horse's neck. "This isn't your fight. But if Pedrus is hurt, I can't carry him out of there all by myself." The horse whinnied like a pony, and craned its neck to look up at him. "You and me, boy. You and me. Right to the end," Corin said softly. And when he looked in the horse's eye, he had the odd feeling that the animal understood him. Surely that was not possible. Thunderbolt winked slowly, tossed his head, and reared up on his back legs, as if eager to get going. He was surprised that he was able to ride all the way down, through the field, splashing across the stream and up to the castle, without any alarm being raised by the enemy. What he had expected was to see soldiers running out, or to hear an arrow whistling past his ear. Everyone inside the castle must be focused on the battle between the wizards. This close to the castle walls, the burnt, rotten egg sulfur smell of wizard fire was overpowering, and the flashes of light were intense enough to leave spots swimming before his eyes. As Thunderbolt galloped up the gentle slope toward the ruined gate, Corrin could feel the horse's muscles quiver with excitement, or fear, or both. With a sharp snort, the horse gathered himself and sprung into the air to leap over a large stone block and into what used to be the courtyard of what Corrin now realized used to be a fortress, not any rich nobleman's castle. Scattered around the courtyard were large stone blocks and piles of smaller stones. There was a flash of wizard fire, illuminating the courtyard with harsh red light, exposing all to Corrin's eyes. And exposing him. He reined Thunderbolt to a halt behind a large pile of stones, and for a moment, everyone froze. Across the courtyard, taking shelter behind stones, were enemy soldiers. Bodies of a half dozen other soldiers were laying on the ground, bodies scorched by wizard fire. Some looked as if they had tried to climb the walls to shoot arrows down at Pedrus, but from the broken and scorched bodies of the dead, the others must have realized that was a foolish idea. Behind other stones, in the middle of the courtyard, were two enemy wizards. Only two. A blackened and cracked pile of stones nearby must have been where the third enemy wizard met his end. With shock, Corrin realized Pedrus must have sent a blast of wizard fire through a block of stone to kill that wizard. He had no idea Pedrus was so powerful. The court wizard so rarely showed his true abilities. And there was Pedrus himself, huddled behind two large stones. No, not huddled. He was slumped over, looking tired and lost. His purple robes were blackened, his face shone with sweat in the moonlight, and his hands shook. But what Corrin saw in the court wizard's face when their eyes met was not fear, but shock. Complete shock. Not at a rescuer appearing, but that his rescuer was Corrin. They'd only a split second to exchange a glance, horror showing in Pedrus's face, when everything happened at once. The enemy wizards quickly recovered from their surprise at the unexpected arrival of Corrin. The one to the left reached back with one hand and began gathering a fireball to throw. But Corrin was faster. So fast, he was barely aware of what he was doing. In one motion, he slid off Thunderbolt, had an arrow knocked on the bowstring before he realized his arm had even reached back into the quiver. Then the arrow was flying on its way toward the wizard. Before Corrin's feet touched the ground, two other arrows followed it, all flying straight and true. It was like living in a dream, where the world moved so slowly as to be almost frozen. Corrin could clearly see the three arrows tracking in on the wizard, the arrows seeming to be suspended on invisible strings in the air. See that wizard's ugly, scarred face change from anger to shock to fear. The hand that had been gathering a fireball flexed open, letting the fireball dissipate into nothingness, while the other hand swept the wizard's staff up into the path of the first arrow. The first arrow was barely knocked aside, its sharp tip slicing the wizard's shoulder as it flew by. The second arrow was well and truly blocked, the staff by now up in front of the wizard, his lips moving rapidly, chanting a spell. The second arrow sprang aside directly to the left of the direction it had been flying. But the third arrow... The third arrow bored in, relentless, unstoppable. Corrin's vision was so clear in the slowed time that he could see the feathers of the fletching at the rear of the arrow waving slightly as they guided the shaft through the air. The sharp tip shone brightly in the moonlight. The wizard's lips froze in mid-chant as he realized to his terror that he would not have time to deflect this arrow, that he, mighty mage of Isidore, was about to be struck by an arrow, a weapon used by lowly soldiers, an arrow of all things. And then the third arrow struck, struck with a solid thunking sound, piercing the wizard's robes, slicing into and through the wizard, until even the feathers were half buried in the man's chest. The man half rose up in utter shock, turning toward the other enemy wizard, who was equally shocked. Shock so deep as to be beyond belief. The stricken man's hand released his staff to fall toward the ground, and touched the back end of the now blood-soaked arrow that protruded from his chest. His fingertips had no more than brushed the arrow when he was incinerated by a searingly bright blue fireball. Pedras had not been sitting idly by as Corrin fought. Taking advantage of the enemy wizard's surprise and weakness and exposure from rising up from behind the stone, the court wizard of Tarador had flung a fireball at the enemy who had besieged him for countless hours.
"Corrin!"
Pedras shouted, his voice hoarse from weakness and thirst.
"You idiot! Get out of here!"
"No! I came to rescue you!"
Corrin shouted, as he slapped Thunderbolt on the rump, and the horse bolted away, startled. Pedras's heart sank, and he felt icy cold with fear. The enemy had set a trap for him, a trap to kill or capture Tarador's court wizard. Now, because a young man was far more brave than sensible, the enemy might unknowingly destroy Tarador's true greatest weapon, or worse, capture Corrin. The remaining enemy wizard could not have missed the astonishing fact that the boy who suddenly appeared in their midst must be a wizard. No one else could possibly have killed a mage of Isildur with a mere arrow. No one but a wizard could have set three arrows in flight before the first was halfway to its target. How could Corrin have been so stupid? Why could he not follow orders? Or had the two soldiers Pedras instructed to keep Corrin safe failed in their duty? All these thoughts raced through Pedras's mind in a flash. And then there was no time for thought, because the enemy struck back, and time slowed again. As Corrin reached back for another arrow, it was his turn to be stricken with fear. The last enemy wizard had seen an opportunity in the brief second while Corrin and Pedras had shouted to each other. An opportunity for a desperate attack. An angry red fireball was already streaking through the air toward Corrin. Corrin's right hand, which had been reaching back for an arrow, turned to flash in front of his face, palm outward in an instinctive and futile last gesture of the doomed. Out of the corner of his eye, Corrin could see Pedras's mouth open in terror as the old wizard shouted, "No!" And then Corrin cringed, closed his eyes, and prepared to die. The fireball struck, enveloping Corrin in searing heat, and washed over and around him. The fireball flowed around Corrin, like it was a rock, and the ball of fire was a fast-flowing stream. It parted around him, rejoining into a single ball of flame behind him, and slammed into the stone wall. Stone chips exploded outward in a violent explosion, and Corrin ducked, flinging himself to the ground. Sharp shards of stone pelted him, inflicting numerous small cuts through his clothing. If the enemy wizard had been shocked by the death of his fellow mage, that did not compare to his utter incomprehension that Corrin had survived the most powerful fireball the wizard was capable of throwing. Survived, it appeared, without even scorching the boy's tangled mess of hair. Unable to speak, or really even to think, the enemy wizard stood halfway up to gape at the boy, was now pushing himself to his knees, shaking his head. From behind a pair of stones rose up the man who had been the Isildur raiding force's prey, the powerful court wizard of Tarador. The two adversaries locked eyes for an instant, as the mage of Asador gestured toward Corin, his mouth forming a silent question. No wizard could have survived being struck by a fireball. A powerful wizard like Pedrus could knock a fireball aside, or block it to splash in front of him. But no one could survive being struck by searing magical fire. Not even, thought the mage, his own dark master. That boy. Could the boy, possibly, be...
Pedrus nodded in answer to the question.
Yes, he said simply, then reached down deep inside himself, gathered his last remaining strength, and the last enemy wizard disappeared in a blaze of blue fire. Pedrus, Corin shouted, as he watched the wizard sink to his knees and fall face down in the dirt and weeds that covered the ground of the old courtyard. The enemy soldiers, cowering in fear and dismay after their three mages were burnt to a crisp, had regained a bit of their courage. True courage was not needed, for many soldiers of Asador were under a compulsion, and that magical urge now reasserted itself. While Corin was straining to lift the wizard onto the kneeling horse, one soldier worked up the nerve to quickly glance above the pile of rocks he was hiding behind. What he saw emboldened him, and he motioned to his fellows. He saw the wizard of Tarador, unconscious, or nearly so, and the boy. By themselves. The boy had survived a fireball, but surely that was the work of a Taradoran wizard, and not the boy. He looked like merely an ordinary boy. One boy, and there were eight veteran soldiers of Asador arrayed against him. Corin's first notion that the enemy was back was an arrow that just missed his head, barely missed because he had reflexively ducked his head aside at the last second. He had heard the whistling of the arrow in flight, or the twanging sound of the bowstring, or had it been something else? With a last desperate heave, he managed to get Pedrus on the back of Thunderbolt, and he spun to face the enemy. He'd only a split second to batter aside another arrow with his bow, and dodge a third before he could knock an arrow of his own and let it fly. The second arrow was on its way to another target before the first arrow had reached halfway across the courtyard, and the first arrow was traveling at blazing speed. The enemy soldier who had been boldest paid the price for his actions, for he had been reaching for another arrow when Corin's first missile caught him square in the chest, flinging him backwards. He sprawled, instantly dead, across a pile of stones. Corin's second target had the good fortune, or sense, to drop down as soon as he loosed his own poorly aimed arrow. But Corin's second arrow still hit the top of the enemy's helmet with enough force to slam his face into a stone and make stars appear in his eyes.
Corin, no. You must get away. Everything depends on it. We are lost if...
Pedrus muttered feverishly, almost in a whisper. Seeing Corin survive being struck by a fireball had not only shocked Pedrus to his core, it terrified him. If Corin was that unimaginably strong now, what would he be when he gained his full powers? And could anyone control such power?
Shh! Quiet, sir. You mustn't strain yourself. You're weak with fever.
Corin was afraid for the wizard's life. The man's pulse was weak and alternately racing and slow. He could not imagine the effort it had taken for Pedrus to fight off, then kill, three enemy wizards. If the enemy had invaded Tarador to set a trap for the court wizard, they must have sent three of their most powerful wizards. That Pedrus survived was a miracle, and now his life hung by a thread. Corin tied a strap across the wizard to hold him onto the horse, and then grasped the bridle to look Thunderbolt in the eyes.
I don't know if Pedras had cast a spell on you, too, or if it is something else, but I think you can understand me somewhat.